In the news.
Welcome to In the News for American and Texas Government. I am Eric McDaniel.
And I'm Jim Henson.
Well, this week we're going to talk quite a bit about the primaries. That seems to be the big thing coming with Super Tuesday. Less than a week away, we're actually going to see a lot of things shake out. And we're seeing some momentum being put forward. Really, if we look at the Republican primaries, specifically South Carolina and in Nevada, we see that Donald Trump is gaining a big head of steam. And so he's moving, the hair is a flapping, and he may be moving towards the nomination. So if you look at the real quick results from this is from Nevada. So this is basically came out yesterday. Is Donald Trump received 45.9% of the vote, which is pretty good. I mean, considering that there are five people actually running, the fact that you got close to half the vote is pretty important. You have Marco Rubio coming in second, which is starting to become an emerging trend, where Marco Rubio is slightly ahead of Ted Cruz. See the same thing in South Carolina. Then you have Ben Carson and John Kasich coming in last. And Kasich, I think, is kind of important because Kasich kept saying, I'm the moderate, I'm the nice guy. He's saying that, but people have questioned whether or not he is the nice guy. But Ben Carson is still hanging in there, even though Ben Carson has done poorly throughout. And Ben Carson, I guess, one article I read that said, stated that you're near the end when Ben Carson keeps saying it's not near the end.
So. Yeah, there's a great story last week about Ben Carson, right before South Carolina, the Cruz campaign eliciting this meeting with Ben Carson. That was supposed to be top secret, and they had it in like a janitor's closet or something, and they couldn't quite come to terms because Carson was still mad about the hijinks that the Cruz campaign had pulled in Iowa.
Yeah, so. I mean, yeah, that's becoming a recurring theme that might be hurting Ted Cruz. Is that Ted Cruz is actually being painted the same way that people painted Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton when they ran in the 90s, of basically doing underhanded tricks, willing to do whatever it takes to win, even if it meant destroying the party. And Ted Cruz fired his one of his top staff members over this.
Right, his communications director. Yeah, I think that, you know, that this argument that Cruz is inherently a liar, underhanded, nasty, has been telegraphed by the Carson campaign as well as the Trump and the Rubio campaigns. It's become something of a problem for the Cruz campaign in the last week. You mentioned Donald Trump having a head of steam. He was definitely feeling it after South Carolina. Let's listen to his victory speech in South Carolina.
You know, I was watching upstairs, and it was really amazing to be watching what I was watching. And some of the pundits, and not, you know, overall fair, but not too much, but a number of the pundits said, well, if a couple of the other candidates dropped out, if you add their scores together, it's going to equal Trump. Right? These geniuses, they're geniuses. They don't understand that as people drop out, I'm going to get a lot of those votes also. You don't just add them together. So I think we're going to do very, very well.
I'm gonna say something right now, which some people may be upset with, but Donald Trump is right. Donald Trump may be the number two option for a lot of people, and we're not really capturing that. And so, you know, my brain may explode, but he's right.
Yeah, my brain may explode, but no, there is something to that. And the big headline there, and we didn't have this in the excerpt we played, was also the night South Carolina was also the night that Jeb Bush dropped out. So let's hear from Jeb Bush.
I congratulate my competitors that are remaining on the island on their success for a race that has been hard fought, just as the contest for the presidency should be, because it is a tough job. In this campaign, I have stood my ground, refusing to bend to the political winds. We put forward detailed, innovative, conservative plans to address the mounting challenges that we face. Because despite what you might have heard, ideas matter, policy matters.
He may not have bent, but those winds blew him down, I think, pretty clearly. That's a campaign that just never got any traction. We've talked about it here before. And really is interesting in the sense that it signals really the end, not just of the Bush dynasty, quote unquote, I think as people keep saying, but of a certain brand of politics in the Republican Party. You look at where John Kasich is. Kasich keeps saying that he is the voice of reason, the moderate voice, as Eric was just saying, but he's really not getting any traction. The person who's trying to be the quote-unquote establishment candidate, Marco Rubio, has always been somebody who came from the right, so he's really positioning himself from the right and extending to the middle, unlike people like Bush, Kasich, who really started center-right and tried to extend over. So Bush out, Donald Trump just looking very dominant in the Republican race at this point as we go into Super Tuesday. Before we move in to talk a little bit about what's coming up, we should also then talk about what happened with the Democrats. So the Democrats had a caucus in Nevada. After a rough few weeks, it turned out to be a very good night for Hillary Clinton. Good in the sense that she won. So she edged Bernie Clinton 52.6 to 47.3. I shouldn't say that's an edge. That's a pretty good margin given a two-person race. Nonetheless, Hillary Clinton comes out of Nevada adding 20 delegates. Sanders adds 15. This race still looks close, but as we head into Super Tuesday, looks pretty good for Hillary Clinton. The way the dynamic of that race has shifted, though, has now seen both candidates really turning towards minority voters. And yeah, I'm looking at you, Eric McDaniel.
Oh, yes, yes. That's not a psychological issue. We actually said we're going to talk about the courting of the black vote. So this has become an amazing effort to where you're seeing both candidates really trying to get at that. And you actually do see, you know, some splintering within the amongst African Americans, but they're actively going after the black vote. And so we have a clip to show you their activities over the past week regarding their attempts to get the black vote.
New polling out of South Carolina does not appear to bode well for Bernie Sanders. Hillary Clinton leads Bernie Sanders by 21 points. That margin is even greater among black Democratic voters. And nationally, Hillary Clinton is drawing a significant portion of her support from younger black voters. According to the latest NBC News poll, 64% of black Democratic voters under 30 back Clinton, while just a quarter support Sanders. African-American voters will play a significant role both in the South Carolina Democratic primary and the states that follow on Super Tuesday and beyond. And today's schedules for both candidates reflect that, starting with Hillary Clinton, who began her day meeting with the National Urban League here in New York and prominent civil rights leaders like Reverend Al Sharpton and NAACP President Cornell Brooks. Afterwards, she headed uptown to Harlem, to Langston Hughes Auditorium, located on Malcolm X Boulevard, to give a speech on, quote, breaking down barriers for African Americans. Bernie Sanders began his day at a prayer breakfast in South Carolina with, according to the New York Times, actor Danny Glover and former NAACP President Ben Jealous, who have both endorsed Sanders. After which Sanders held a town hall meeting at the University of South Carolina, where he was introduced by Erica Garner, the daughter of Eric Garner, who died after being put in a chokehold by a New York police officer. None of the officers were charged. Today, the Sanders campaign announced a massive TV ad buy with a two-minute ad featuring Garner's endorsement airing in every broadcast market in South Carolina tomorrow, as well as on national cable morning shows and BET.
All right, so as you see, Hillary Clinton was in New York, and she went up to Harlem to get her uptown funk on. I said funk. All right, so, and this is, you know, an attempt to recruit black voters. I think one of the things that's helping her is that she has a history of black voters. Bernie Sanders, as I've said, you know, comes from Vermont, and we Googled this before class. It has 1.2% black, so it is one of the whitest states in America. So Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire are considered the kind of the three whitest states in America. And the problem with Bernie Sanders is, you know, how is he able to relate to African Americans? They point out that he went to a prayer breakfast, but one of the problems is Bernie is kind of not so open about, you know, religion, kind of want to push religion back. But the problem is black people are extremely open to religion. All right, so for instance, rappers who, you know, win the Grammy for, you know, Back That Booty Up, first want to thank their Lord and Savior Jesus Christ for winning the Grammy. So this right here shows you that religion permeates everything within black community. And so Bernie may have to get up there, say a few amens, hallelujahs, to try to recruit people in because he's not doing so well.
And well, part of the issue too is that a lot of black voters, based on the polling, don't really know who Bernie Sanders is to begin with, right? So there may be a little room to grow, but it does seem like he's got an uphill battle. And if we look at approval numbers and we look at, you know, polling overall, Hillary Clinton is running very strong among black voters. So we want to now transition and look at the University of Texas, Texas Tribune poll, which we just released yesterday. This is polling in Texas only. And we did polling and we did a survey on the both of these presidential races in Texas. On the Democratic side, we found Hillary Clinton among likely voters leading Bernie Sanders by 10 points. If you look at the overall sample there, what you're going to see is that Clinton had a bigger lead among all voters when we don't reduce it of about 17 points. And what this really looks like is that we were in the we were collecting this data at really the sweet spot for Bernie Sanders in Texas. We were in the field between his win in New Hampshire, but before he lost in South Carolina. That probably helped Bernie Sanders to some degree.
Nevada.
So if we then look then at the breakdown among racial and ethnic groups in Texas, we see in Texas what we've been talking about. Hillary Clinton doing very well among black voters compared to Sanders, and pretty well with Latino voters in Texas, both of which work very well for her in a state, particularly with a large population of Latino voters. And if we look at, you know, that 10-point number and that 17-point number, what it really points to is, as Darren Shaw and I were talking about yesterday, it points to how important the Latino vote is in Texas. The more Latinos turn out, the better off Clinton is going to be, the larger that gap will be for her come Super Tuesday next week. Okay, we also polled on the Republican race. Not surprisingly, Ted Cruz leading the pack among likely voters by about 8 points, 37-29, with Marco Rubio at 14. Jeb Bush was still on the ballot at this point, so on the trial ballot, you know, pulled single figures, validating his effort to get out, still doing poorly in Texas. A couple of things to point out there. One, if we look at the breakdown among conservatives in Texas, Ted Cruz doing best, very well among people who identify as extremely conservative. He's got more than half of those voters. Trump kind of picking the pockets of all of the other groups relatively evenly, much as he's done in the rest of the country. And you know, Eric, I think what's really interesting about this is the fact that for all the advantages that Cruz is enjoying in Texas, you know, he's polled well here all along. He's very well liked among a very conservative electorate. For all the ways that Texas tries to pose itself as much different than the rest of the country, Donald Trump looks a lot in Texas, his numbers look a lot in Texas, like he does in the rest of the country. He's pulling between 25-35%, and he's pulling evenly from lots of groups. And this is, you know, in some ways, it's moderately good news for Ted Cruz because he is ahead. Yeah. But if you go back a year ago, I think the crux of the Cruz strategy was to really crank in Texas. And Trump, just like he's confounded everyone else's strategy, has confounded that strategy in Texas.
Yeah, I mean, we joke about Donald Trump, and one of the things we have to admit is he's been able to touch on something that others have not. And so while it's easy to make fun of him because of some of the statements he makes, but he's been able to tap into something. You know, I think Bernie Sanders is hoping to do that on the Democratic side, but it doesn't look like it's working as well. But Donald Trump has clearly tapped into something which is resonating throughout the nation and even in Texas, which you consider to be Cruz country. And to me, we should, you know, seriously look at what is he saying, what is he tapping into. You know, some may say what he's tapping into is bad, some may say it's good, but he's tapping into something. And part of campaigns is tapping into something and getting the people behind you because they believe that you are in touch with their interests.
Yeah, I think when we ask people in the poll, what is it that's kind of informing your choice of candidate? We gave them a list of reasons. For the Trump voters, the economy and shaking politics as usual up were the top responses. Now, one of the interesting things about those results that we got was that shaking things up was not uniform across the board. Really, one of the other competing top responses was a candidate that can win in November. But there are a lot of Republicans in Texas that think both Cruz and Trump can win in November as well as shake things up. So that really informed a lot of voter choices.
Yeah, and shaking things up is always problematic in my mind because a lot of times when you shake things up, you may actually make things worse. So one of the reasons you may have problems in Congress is because while you do have two parties in Congress, it seems like you have splintering within the Republican Party. So it looks a little bit more like Parliament. And so all of a sudden you have, instead of, you know, it being three or four issues that separate the parties, you now have multiple issues that separate the parties, which means you can't get anything done. The Democratic Party, I think they can resolve this kind of Sanders versus Clinton thing, especially if Clinton does very well on Super Tuesday. It can be resolved very quickly. They can start to heal the wounds. But with the Republican Party, this may drag out for some time. And, you know, you may run into the problem where, you know, you make fatal blows. And so the idea is whoever wins, the members of the party is going to have a very bad taste in their mouth about it.
Yeah, we saw that in some of the polling in Texas. We asked people, you know, what their views were of, you know, how competent a president each candidate would make. On the Democratic side, there was general agreement, even if you supported the other candidate, that both candidates, you know, had relatively positive assessments all over the board in the Democratic field or in the Republican field. Lots of Republicans who would not, you know, did not have a very positive expectation of other candidates in the field, including some of the leaders. So early voting still going on in Texas. So for the rest of the week, don't forget to vote. We have a slight correction from last week or the week before. On the Democratic side, they just, you know, relatively quietly ended the Texas two-step process that we talked about last week. So rather than caucuses in the evening, voting in the day, Democratic primary this year simplified back to simply going and voting in the primary. You know, I would argue simplified in part to help Hillary Clinton, who didn't do as well in the caucuses last time.
Yeah, and they're also, they are giving out cards or information in terms of attending the county and state conventions.
Right.
That's what's going on. So a lot of people, I was confused about the caucuses because they were handing out information about,
right,
about attending these things. So, so right now what it's looking like is, you know, make sure you go out to vote. I did it yesterday. You get a chance to do your early voting yet?
I haven't done my early voting. My wife and I go together. Usually.
Okay.
It's like a thing.
Oh, that's so sweet and romantic. Remember, there are voting stations here on campus. So if you want to vote and you're registered in Travis County, you can vote here on campus. So again, we ask you to exercise your right to vote. Clearly express, you know, who you believe is best to represent the party that you align with, but also the direction of the nation you would like to go. I mean, not necessarily agree, but it's very important to actually show up and to be part of this dialogue. So that's all we have for this week. So next week we will talk about the results of Super Tuesday. And so we look forward to seeing you next week. Have a good week.
So long.
The Government 310 in the News podcast is hosted by Drs. Jim Henson and Eric McDaniel and is produced by the Liberal Arts ITS Development Studio and the Department of Government in the College of Liberal Arts at the University of Texas at Austin.